really fundamentally an American.
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our engineer is Steve Nolan. Today we're producing a special program of juicy leftovers for the Drug Truth Network. Among those we'll be hearing from are comedians Bill Maher and Woody Harrelson, Congressman Ron Paul, and Dan Burton. So without much further ado, let's go ahead and kick this off with a speech by Bill Maher at the 2002 Normal Convention in beautiful, smoke-free San Francisco.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You're very kind, and I'm sure very stoned. So I think that accounts for that warm show. But hey, it's 2 o'clock. It doesn't seem, when you think about it, that it should be that hard to get a vast majority of people in this country to admit publicly or support publicly the idea of decriminalizing the one drug that never kills anybody. But the reason why it is hard, I think, is there is a vast silent majority, and I do mean silent. And it's up to us in this room, who have commissioned ourselves to lead this battle, to awaken that silent majority and tell them that they can't be silent anymore. I mean, the problem with this drug is complacency. It's that it lulls us into this sense of complacency, and we forget about the people who really are suffering, who are arrested for it. Keith is right. I'm here a lot because my friend is in prison, and it hurts me. Not as much as it hurts him, but it bothers me a lot. It makes me mad. It makes me mad that so many hundreds of thousands of Americans are arrested. That is a big number. If that was a disease, people wouldn't stand for it. And you know, these are Americans. I understand that Americans are not real good at understanding or having empathy for foreigners. That's one thing. But these are your fellow citizens. And, you know, marijuana smokers have a well-deserved reputation of some really good qualities, like being tolerant and open-minded. And these are wonderful things. I just wonder if they haven't hurt us in this struggle. Because we should be intolerant of the injustice that is going on. I want to see more anger. You know, the Nixon Commission report was 30 years ago. And we're still here. And we still have to crawl into alleyways like criminals to smoke a joint. And those are the lucky ones who aren't in prison for it. I mean, it is such a triumph of fear and ignorance over fact and logic that the drug that kills nobody is the illegal one. How would you explain that to an alien who came down? It's because everything in America is about marketing and image. A bad product, well apologized for, is always better than a good product. It's all about Madison Avenue, but that is where the battle is won. And I think we have been reluctant because we are good people. Like I said, tolerant, open-minded. You know, we're like the Indians. We do not want to use white man's evil ways. Well, but we're going to have to use the white man's evil ways. This isn't like the war on terrorism. We can't just win it by putting a flag on our car. So nothing changes in America without the cooperation of two shameless beasts, the media and politicians. And you have to put a human face on this. We have to put a human face on this. We have to do what everybody does, which is manipulate the media and politicians. to do things in their interest, because they only do things in their interest. Long gone are the days when the institutions of the media and politicians felt they had a public obligation to do what's right. No, no, we have to appeal to ratings and votes. That's all they care about. How do we make it interesting for them? How do we make it profit them? Well, you know, if someone really wanted to make pot acceptable and they had the kind of money that they have for a McDonald's campaign or to put George Bush in the White House, you could make pot acceptable. You can convince people of anything. George Bush one day became a reformer with results. Imagine convincing people that George Bush was a reformer. Oh yeah, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, George Bush. That's who I think of as the reformers, the real skunk at the garden party. They called him a Washington outsider. Again, it's all how you market it. That is the key, is image. And unless we put a human face on that, unless people who don't smoke pot feel as affected by this as they do by something else they're not connected to, cystic fibrosis. People don't have that, but they feel for the victims of it. Why can't we do that? It's a victim culture. And the irony is, some of these people really are victims. They're truly victims in a war that we can't win. We should be as offended as everyone else is in America for their bullshit causes. Yeah. You know, when you hear someone support the drug war, be offended. You know, if they make a bad pot joke, that offends us. How about us having a little zero tolerance? I have zero tolerance for the ridiculous notion that sobriety is the time-tested route to mind expansion. White man's way number three. It's a disease, okay? Everything in America has to be a disease with a victim, and this is certainly as bad as cancer. Why is cancer a tragedy? Because it robs people of years of their life. Well, my friend Todd McCormick just got robbed of 3 years of his life. It's the same thing. I'm getting a little tired of being treated like a criminal and second-class citizen by people who, through their preference for liquor or pills to mood-alterate themselves, show not a superiority of taste, but an inferiority of taste. White man's way number five. It's a religion. Why shouldn't it be? The Rastas have the right idea. So marijuana, which has helped many people with insights of love and brotherhood that I know that Jesus Christ was trying to tell people about, that can't be a religion. It's as much a religion as Catholicism ever was to me. I think it teaches a lot of people about opening up their mind to the things that a religion should want you to open up your mind to. And after church, have a nice church picnic. Everyone will be hungry. White man's way number six. Economics. That's how you get to people in this country. We're great at one thing. Money. People love money. They're greedy. It's a capitalistic country. Make the status quo more uncomfortable. That's when things change, when things become more uncomfortable. Then people can make the change and say they did it for the right reasons. But really it's because you made it uncomfortable. You notice, like the police, they never bug the rappers about pot because they go, hey, that's just their culture. Well, you know, it's our culture. We want the rapper treatment. Rapper treatment. Which is acceptance. Just acceptance. Okay, now here's the true axis of evil. Politicians, parents, and the prominent. Those are the three P's we have to change. Politicians react to voters. And voters are parents. who are voters? They generally tend to be older. They tend to be parents, because parents think of themselves as responsible. Fun is over, they have kids. Might as well fucking vote. That is where the battle has to be won. Parents are the voters. That's who politicians are afraid of. Parents, who probably do smoke pot, but feel that the world is such a besieging thing for them and their children that they will do anything to keep marijuana away from their kids. That hypocrisy has to be pointed out. We do everything to protect our children, and we can be good and sympathetic and helpful with that. But doing everything to protect our children turned out to be jailing people, testifying, confiscating property, burning up the crops in other countries. Take care of your own kids without using your fellow citizens as cannon fodder in the war on drugs. Because every administration faces that same nagging problem that so many things kill so many people. I mean, alcohol kills hundreds of thousands, tobacco, 400,000. The shitty, crappy food that people eat in this country kills hundreds of thousands. Doctors f***ing up kill 100,000 people. Pot, zero. Always zero. They all do a study, it all comes back the same. It makes you eat cookie dough. That's the worst thing you find. But it is amazing. Pot, zero. If people don't start dying from this drug, it is never going to be legal. So I want you all to start dying. I am willing to volunteer myself. Someone tried to kill me tonight. So President Bush said a few weeks ago that we have a new slogan and we should all get behind it, and I agree. And that's why I say to you tonight, but I hope you take what I say seriously, make change happen, and let's roll.
This is David Rovix, and you're listening to Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war on Pacifica Radio.
Hitched a ride out to Portland. One up to BC, took a bus over to Hastings Street to have a bowl with my coffee. Now I'm up in Vancouver at the Cannabis Cafe, smoking good old Sensimilia at the beginning of the day. Now I'm up in Vancouver. The Cannabis Cafe, smoking good old Sensimilia at the beginning of the day.
U.S. Congressman Dan Burton speaking on his last day of chair of the U.S. Colombian Cocaine Committee.
I want to tell you something. I have been in probably 100, 150 hearings like this at various times in my political career. And the story is always the same. This goes all the way back to the 60s, you know, 35, 40 years ago. And every time I have a hearing, I hear that people who get hooked on heroin and cocaine become addicted, and they very rarely get off of it. And the scourge expands and expands and expands. And we have very fine law enforcement officers like you go out and fight the fight. And you see it grow and grow and grow, and you see these horrible tragedies occur. But there's no end to it. And I see young guys driving around in tough areas of Indianapolis in cars that I know they can't afford. And I know where they're getting their money. I mean, there's no question. A kid can't be driving a brand new Corvette when he lives in the inner city of Indianapolis in a ghetto. And you know that he's got to be making that money in some way that's probably not legal and probably involves drugs. Over 70% of all crime is drug-related, and you've alluded to that today. We saw on television recently Pablo Escobar gunned down, and everybody applauded that and said, that's the end of the Medellin cartel. But it wasn't the end. Yeah, there's still a cartel down there. They're still all over the place. When you kill one, There's 10 or 20 or 50 waiting to take his place. You know why? It's because of what you said just a minute ago, Mr. Carr and Mr. Marcucci. And that is, there's so much money to be made in it. There's always going to be another person in line to make that money. And we go into drug eradication, and we go into rehabilitation, and we go into education, and we do all these things. And the drug problem continues to increase, and it continues to cost us not billions, but trillions of dollars. Trillions! And we continue to build more and more prisons, and we put more and more people in jail, and we know that the crimes that they're committing are related most of the time to drugs. So I have one question I'd like to ask all of you, and I think this is a question that needs to be asked. I hate drugs. I hate people who succumb to the drug addiction, and I hate what it does to our society. It's hit every one of us in our families or friends of ours. But I have one question that nobody ever asks, and that's this question. What would happen if there was no profit in drugs? If there was no profit in drugs, what would happen? I'd like for any of you to answer that. If they couldn't make any money out of selling drugs, what would happen?
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of DrugSense. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Okay, a bit later you're going to get a chance to name that drug by its side effects, and we'll name the Cultural Baggage Hero of the Week. But first up, let's hear from this year's speaker at the Normal Conference, Mr. Woody Harrelson.
What we really know about Woody and what is so important to all of us is that Woody has been the single most outspoken advocate for marijuana and hemp in America. Please welcome Woody Harrelson.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Wow. I'd like to thank the Academy. Oh. Broad speech, 1997. I'll get to do it someday, but you know what I notice here is there's a lot of very hungry people. I don't know why, but I'm noticing a lot of hunger. Okay. This is an odd place to say it, but I guess now is as good a time as any. I decided to quit smoking marijuana. Then I realized, hey, I'm not a quitter. Rehab's for quitters. That's why I'm here with you tonight. I, like most of you, grew up an addict. I started off in my mother's womb, as most of you did, too. And it was back during the time in the early 60s when people were still believing with all their conviction that it was actually healthy to smoke cigarettes, and so I got used to that regular nicotine rush with my mommy when I was in utero. And after that, of course, with the formula and everything they give you, I got addicted to sugar. Not long after that, because I found it difficult to sit in a chair for 8 hours and listen to boring people talk. Who weren't being paid well or recognized or validated. So they gave me a Ritalin, and I got addicted to that. And then, of course, I was also into one of the other big drugs, caffeine. So I used to have Coca-Cola, as I guess you'd call that, the corporate speedball kind of. And so here I am today. A product of all that upbringing. And in fact, I remember when I was a kid, I can remember my mom sitting in the kitchen, and she's got her coffee and cigarette first thing in the morning, you know, just to get the engines going. And I can remember her saying to me, "Now, son, If I ever find out you smoke marijuana, it'll just kill me. But it seems, you know, not unlike my mom, a lot of people in the world have this disconnect in their understanding of from one drug to another drug. Now, obviously, this war on non-corporate drugs has become a very popular thing, well, for the fascists, but I guess it's this strange thing that some people have where they see what they're doing is 100% okay and what you're doing is not quite okay. And so, you know, I'm wondering if there's a way to change that. I think that the real issue is consensual crimes, the victimless crimes, that anything you're doing that doesn't hurt someone else or somehow hurt their property should be A-okay. I mean, what does it mean to live in a free country? And if, in fact, we're in a free country, don't you think we should be able to do what we want to do as long as we aren't hurting anybody else? You know, because the way my mom raised me, particularly, and I was a very religious type, I grew up with this feeling that marijuana was a bad thing. And so I didn't smoke it for quite a while. Didn't try it at all. And God, was I boring. So I didn't really start smoking it until I was 21 years old. And, you know, so I didn't believe that smoking and athletics mixed. In fact, I used to look down on the stoners, and, you know, they'd always be out at the smoking lounge, and I'd just be like, oh, you people. In fact, my younger brother was one of those people. And, well, my older brother as well. And boy, did I look down on them from on high, you know. I mean, no pun, but. So me and San Angelo, you know, he finally says, you know, I got this marijuana. It's pretty, I never have smoked marijuana. And my mom does not want me to smoke. And then, yeah, you know, this is pretty good stuff here, and actually I got a couple of different varieties. That way it looks like. Let me smell it. I said, I don't want to do it. He says, okay, well, I'm going to do it. You go ahead. I don't care what you do, but I'm not going to do it. So he smokes it, and I'm like smelling it. This is my closest contact with marijuana. I'm like, okay. I think I'm going to hit off that. I'm 21 years old. I can do what I want. I took a hit, and I felt so great. I mean, to this day, I have a very serious problem with the government that doesn't want you to smoke something because it makes you feel euphoric. Why should euphoria be a bad thing? Well, I mean, I'm the first to admit that, of course, you can get addicted. You know? Not me, but probably some of you could be addicted. No, I can quit at the drop of a hat, and I have done so hundreds of times, so I have no problem with marijuana, because there's 550,000 people dying every year directly related to cigarette smoke, and there's 150,000 who are dying from alcohol, there's another 120 to 150 from pharmaceuticals, so there's nobody dying from smoking pot. I mean, I have night after night tried to kill myself. We got so much disinformation that we got to get the real information out there. And I think that Normal and a lot of other groups and individuals are really helping to get this positive information out. But to me, again, it comes back to a very basic thing of this hypocrisy. To have a war on non-corporate drugs, and then to all of these other drugs that we know are doing people harm, seem to be A-okay. In fact, it's the bigger issue of freedom and consensual crimes and victimless crimes. All victimless crimes are not crimes. If you're not hurting someone else, you're not hurting their property, then it's not a crime. And so what I think... Most of you probably know that in order for them to arrest you and incarcerate you and everything else they have to do just for simple, you know, drug use or marijuana use, it costs them a lot more than what they end up fining you for it. So a massive civil disobedience is, I think, going to be one of our ways to turn this thing around. And last but not least, I would like to thank Normal and thank Keith. Thank all of you for being here today.
Thank you.
I appreciate you taking the time to be here and caring about this. And all I can say is keep fighting the good fight. Power to the peaceful. Thank you all.
Okay, next up we're going to hear a little bit from U.S. Congressman Ron Paul.
And then this whole idea of medical marijuana, denying it to somebody that may get some relief from the nausea of chemotherapy and the physicians aren't giving them any help, and saying that you're not going to give them freedom of choice. I mean, this is just preposterous. And yet, that's what we have accepted here in this country, and it has not been our tradition. Most Americans aren't aware of that. Most Americans think that, oh, these drugs must have been illegal for, you know, throughout our history. But this is a recent phenomenon.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Brown urination, fever, muscle pain, unusual tiredness, yellowing of the skin or eye, diarrhea, gas, headache, joint pain, nausea, and vomiting. Time's up. The answer, Lipitor. Howard Wooldridge, a retired police officer and member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, is this week finishing up a 3,200-mile horseback trek across America. According to a report from the Statesman Journal, retired officer Wooldridge leaves quite an impression on people. Could be because of his one-eyed horse, Misty. Or could it be his homemade t-shirt which says, "Cops say legalize marijuana, ask me why."
So we've had wonderful help along the way. And then in terms of drug reform with my t-shirt and with Misty being such an attraction, we've gathered lots of media, not to exaggerate, but between about 12, 13 times on TV, about 50 times with newspapers and a half dozen radio shows. We've probably made contact with roughly a million people. Ending prohibition probably would get rid of most, if not all, drug dealers. And this is the kind of message that we all need to get out there in terms of ending prohibition, to help the children, to help our youth, by getting rid of these blood-sucking drug dealers. And the only way to do it is to end prohibition.
For outstanding achievement in the field of drug reform, we are proud to name Officer Howard Wooldridge as the Cultural Baggage Hero of the Week. Well, we hope you enjoyed these juicy leftovers from Cultural Baggage and that you'll join us next week for the best of Cultural Baggage. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.